Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Now commencing. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
So far, so good.
With guest host, Jim Jackson.
I like it.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
We all learned a lot about these teams, and here it is.
You've got to be kidding me. Caitlin Clark.
Earlier on the show, Turner Sports play-by-play announcer Brian Anderson, two-time national championship head coach Jay Wright. Coming up, veteran NBA head coach and analyst Stan Van Gundy. And now, sitting in for Rich, Jim Jackson.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. Again, it is Jim Jackson. A little bit different than Rich Eisen sitting over here right now, even though I'm an Ohio State guy. Listen, I have one of my favorite.
There's a lot different.
Just nuances.
I'm saying you're tall.
Kind of tall. Yeah.
Infinitely better athlete.
You know, better looking.
What's
a little
your 40
bit.
Time right now, Jim?
Yeah. The wind is not the same due to some particular tobacco from the cigars. So
from Cuba?
From Cuba. And I clarified tobacco, cigars, okay? I wanted to make sure.
Maybe some Nicaragua thrown in there.
Actually, here's the
it
thing
is
about
legal
the,
here in California.
Here's the thing just about the cigar industry, okay? It's like wine, very much like wine. The process is from seed to grape to bottle is like going from seed to tobacco to box. It's the same, you know, same thing. Is that Nicaraguan tobacco is on the line of Cuban tobacco because the soils are pretty similar. The climate is pretty similar. So yep. When a lot of stuff happened in Cuba, a lot of the cigar makers rolled out and left and found and went to Nicaragua because it was very temperate and it's very much the same. So a lot of similarities in Nicaraguan cigars that you will find in Cuban cigar. And what they've done is they taken like the Cuban seed, blended it with some other tobacco and create a different taste profile.
Okay.
So as you can tell, I'm into it big time.
Hey, we might have to get some.
And speaking about big time, I got to bring in my guy, big time Stan Van Gundy, coming in right now.
Stan.
What's up, my man?
Stan.
Not a whole lot. Hey, Jim, for Christmas this year, my daughter's fiance is trying to get into the cigars. I know nothing. So I had to go to NBA guys. I had to go to Keith Askins and Tim Hardaway, and they had to tell me what to buy, where to go, the whole thing, so that I could get my cigars. So I know there's a bunch of you into that, NBA guys, into the cigars, and you guys know what's going on.
Listen, I got into it. Ron Harper is the culprit in this. This was their three-peat years. Of course, I was in Dallas. I wasn't going to the playoffs, so I was going to watch Chicago play. But hanging out with the Bulls at that time, which was a rock show, that's how I got into cigars, watching them and then participating a little bit and having a cigar. I was like, man, this is the NBA. So they lived in a separate NBA. I was over here, you know, with the Dallas Mavericks. So that's how I got into it, man. What you got going on this week, Stan? What games you got?
I've just got the one NBA game. I got the Kings at the Knicks. But as you know, Jim, I mean, other than the Celtics, who are sort of where they're going to be, and then the teams that are out of it, everybody else has really got a lot to play for. You know, they're playing for home court. A lot of teams fighting to get out of the play-in. So these last few games, I think, will have a playoff atmosphere. Teams are really, really fighting, and the Knicks and Kings are two of them, so it should be a lot of fun.
You know, based on your coaching career and being around NBA, the last couple of years have been so tight near the end of the season where you kind of figured, okay, it's Boston in the East, maybe it's Denver in the West, but everything else was still in the air. Has this been really great for basketball in regards to intrigue in the last, you know, month of the season, 2 weeks of the season?
I mean, I think so, Jim. I think you'd probably agree. Like, I look at the West and I say, there's not a single series, even in the first round, that I would consider like a real upset of what's going to happen. I mean, any of those teams, you're looking at, you know, the last team in will probably be the Lakers or the Warriors as an 8 seed with LeBron James or Steph Curry. Like, and then in the East, I would have said Boston was the only one that wouldn't be a good series. But Boston could get the 76ers with Joel Embiid in the first round. So it's going to be crazy. I think we'll get some tight series. And I don't think anything would surprise anybody.
To your point, too, in the Western Conference, it's funny is because some teams can play other teams better. Like the Clippers have an issue with Denver. Okay, they may have an issue with OKC, but then the Lakers don't have an issue with OKC, but they have an issue with Sacramento. It's like all these little intriguing storylines, depending on the matchups, like you said, that will dictate kind of what happens in the Western Conference. At the end of the day, though, is there – we know how good and dominant Denver is because of Jokic. Is there right behind is a team that you say, you know what, if they kind of get things together – they can be right there with Denver in the Western Conference Finals?
Well, the team I've looked at all year and they've disappointed lately has been the Clippers. I mean, that team is loaded, and with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the wings, two of the best two-way players in the game. They got a great playmaker in Harden. They've got size inside. Ty Lue is a very good, very experienced coach. I think they've got talent. And then, you know, everybody wants to count out Oklahoma City as too young and Minnesota with the Towns injury and a lack of experience. But when you do it that many times in the regular season against good teams, I don't think you can count them out. And then, you know, look at the star power we have below that. I mean, Doncic and Kyrie Irving, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, Fox and Sabonis, Durant, Booker, and Beal. These are on the bottom teams. I mean, I think it's going to be great, Jim. I think it's going to be fantastic to watch.
Well, I thought the Mavericks made some key acquisitions, of course, in key positions, especially with Gafford inside. Do you think that with those changes, that with Kyrie kind of accepting the role of Robin, so to speak, to Luka, and Luka really embracing Kyrie, that's a team that you wouldn't be surprised that could be right back in it with those two individuals plus the moves they made?
Absolutely. And I think the key thing is, you know, Jason Kidd has said it's, you know, their defensive improvement has fueled this run, and they have gotten better. Look, they're so good offensively. They just need to be average, maybe a little above defensively. And for a good part of the year, they were terrible defensively. But of late, they've been a top 10 defensive team. And with that, plus those two guys in the backcourt, I mean, that is going to be a tough team for anybody to beat.
Question for you. And this has been thrown around a lot, too. And I, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, but the state of which where the Golden State Warriors are at right now, every dynasty comes to an end at some point. Everything starts to go away. Are we, and this could be a rhetorical question, are we starting to see those fragments come apart a little bit in regards to where we once saw this Golden State team as a dominant team and always in the mix?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that dominant Golden State team is done. And so now the decisions for that front office, I think, are hard. I mean, do you go out and trade guys like Kuminga and Podziemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis and maybe try to get more veteran help and try to make one more run with Steph Curry and then just realize you're going to be horrible when it's done? Some people have even suggested, or do you go absolutely the other way and deal Steph Curry now while he's still got a lot of value and start over? If they don't do anything, I think they're right back where they are now next year bottom of the play-in, hope maybe you get some luck, catch fire, and make a run in the playoffs, but not a true contender.
Well, speaking about contender, too, the Lakers kind of fall in that category. You still have AD, you still have LeBron, 10th spot. We saw what they did last year. Realistically, in your point of view, where do you see the Lakers?
Yeah, about the same place. I mean, look, the Lakers seem to me to be about the only team in the league that doesn't think shooting is important. You know, they've got pretty good players around those two guys. They don't have any shooting, like, you know, and they don't seem to really have prioritized trying to get any shooting around those guys. So, yeah, I just think that's a very mediocre team that is, you know, relying on two great players to carry them every night. But if you're an opposing coach, you know, there's a lot you can do, you know, double teaming those guys and getting the ball out of their hands. And everybody else has had spurts. Reeves has had spurts in the year. D'Angelo Russell's had spurts, but nobody's proven that you can count on them every night.
Well, but how much of their salary cap restrictions limited them to really going out to find that kind of play? And who was out there in the market to go get from a shooting perspective?
Now, that's a good point, and I'd have to think back. But, you know, there's a lot of pretty good shooters playing on minimum contracts in the league. So I don't know what they are. They're not a real good offensive team. They're not a real good defensive team. Like I said, I just think that's a mediocre team. And I think, and this happens to teams, you know, they came out of the play-in, made it to the conference finals last year with a little bit of luck in terms of who they drew, right? Memphis without Ja Morant. And so you get that kind of luck and it causes you to over-evaluate your roster. And so they just basically brought everybody back thinking, hey, we're a conference finals team, where my view is, no, you're a play-in team that played well at the end of the year and also got a lot of luck. I don't know that you can count on that again.
Well, speaking about count again, why is this Minnesota team so different this year than last year?
You know, Anthony Edwards' development, I think, has been great. And when they had the two big guys together, it looked, as you know, Jim, it did not look good at all last year. Looked very awkward. And this year, you know, Chris Finch did a great job bringing them together and got it to work. And they've had the full year of Mike Conley directing traffic. And this team sort of fits together. Now, I question whether they have enough shooting going forward in a playoff series. And as you know, the preparation ramps up. And so, you know, people tend to really hone in on you in the playoffs. And I think Anthony Edwards is going to see a lot of extra defenders coming at him and saying, we don't think your other guys can make enough shots.
That team, to me, because defensively they've locked in, and I thought that this year Rudy and Carl Anthony kind of figured some things out of how to play together, and it kind of worked out. But the toughness in which they play with, I think having Mike Conley for a full year, going through training camp, paid huge dividends. Jaden McDaniels, the job that he does on and off the ball. How about Naz Reid? A few years ago, they had questions, if you remember, Stan, about whether they were going to re-sign Naz Reid back to Minnesota, and what's that been? But it's intriguing to me, kind of like OKC. We know how good they are, but are they ready to kind of mentally lock in? Can they take that? Do they have the leadership to take that next step to actually get to a conference finals and get to an NBA championship?
Yeah, no, it's tough. And you know that, you know, teams coming up, Jim, you know, the first time through it. This really isn't their first time, but with this whole group together, it is. It'll be difficult. I think they've got some weaknesses that people can expose beyond their lack of experience. But Anthony Edwards is the real deal. We know what Gobert is defensively. We know how much Mike Conley can, you know, direct traffic and run the show. The question is going to be Carl Anthony Towns. What kind of health is he in, and what's he ready to give you in the playoffs? If he's back at full strength, though, that's a really, really good team.
Yeah. We got a lot of intriguing storylines, I mean, going into the playoffs. And I wanted to ask you this too, Stan, from this perspective, because you've been around it. We were together in Miami on the coaching sidelines. Do you miss it, man? Do you miss in that pilot seat?
I do. You know, what I really miss, Jim, is the camaraderie of a team that really pulling together, working toward a goal. Like, you know, I mean, I love what I'm doing now, as I'm sure you do. But, you know, after a game, you don't know if you did well or didn't.
Right.
You know,
that's
like,
right.
It's subjective.
What Twitter
when
let
you're
you know.
Playing or coaching. Yeah, Twitter.
Twitter let you know everything.
On Twitter. They know everything. But, you know, like when you're playing or coaching, you got the report card right up there, you know, to look at every night. Did I have a good night or a bad night? It's right up on the board. And when that, what that does, you know, with a team pulling together to try to get the results, it goes beyond just friendship and stuff. I think you gain a real mutual respect for the people you're in the locker room with. And I miss that part of it a lot. I miss the competition. But I got great seats for some great games right now. So I'm certainly not complaining.
Yeah, but you had to change, too, your coaching style, philosophy as the game evolved, the younger players. How was that transition for you? Because, you know, Pat Riley days are hardcore practices, no days off. You're not missing games, but it's a different attitude. It's a different mindset. It's a different way you do things, approach things. How did you have to adjust to the changing times?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that, you know, and how you talk to guys and everything else, you've got to adjust to. But I probably took a middle road, like, you know, I never went to the we're not going to practice and we're not going to do walkthroughs. You know, we're still prepared every day with a walkthrough, some of them in the hotel, but we did all of that. We didn't do as much in practice, certainly, as we did when you and I were together in Miami, but we still practiced. So sort of tried to walk a middle line, and regardless, you've got to have the right kind of guys in the locker room. You got to have guys who want to work, who want to put in the time, who understand the importance of preparation. If you have those guys, no matter what you do, you'll be okay.
All right. Good stuff, my man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I look forward to this Thursday, but then coming up in the playoffs and where everything may lead us, because it should be a good one, man. Should be a good one this year, because we don't know. But I appreciate it, my man. Thanks for coming on.
That's great. All right, man. We'll be watching each other in the playoffs.
You got it, brother.
All right, Jim.
All right. Man.
Stan, legend.
Legend, right?
Stan, man.
He was our, when I was in Miami, our assistant coach.
Okay.
And you handled the defense and everything. Like, and it's funny watching, like, Tibbs was an assistant coach on that when I was in Houston, mm-hmm. and watching them from a assistant coach perspective, kind of it's different being a head coach because you got more pressure. So, you know, people think of Tibbs as just, you know, this mean, rough kind of guy. But as an assistant coach, it was just like,
well, they can be cool.
Cool is everything.
Yeah.
You know, and to see Stan right there, and I know he still has that coaching itch.
Yeah.
You know,
doesn't just leave, right?
Uh-uh. Especially sometimes when you've had, I think, you know, New Orleans, they had a lot of expectations, and he didn't really get the full breadth of Zion being healthy.
Right.
Yeah. Ingram being healthy to really see how good they could be. So it's almost like a guy retiring, like, okay, what did I leave on the table? Mm. You know, what could have been? But it's going to be interesting, man, to see. He got some great points about the Western Conference in regards to Denver, you know, but then after that, it's just like,
well, it's kind of almost a shrug emoji of just like, what are we getting from the rest of these teams night in and night out? I mean, with no Cat, we've seen Ant really become, his superstar has taken off, you know, he's getting the young Mike Kobe comparisons. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy. A lot of expectations, but have they been battle tested in a Western Conference semis or finals? No. Oklahoma City, so young.
So
but they've
young.
Been so great all year.
Yep.
Shea's probably MVP, right?
If you really look at the dynamics of all year, what they've accomplished.
He led the league in 30-point games this year. He's been unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It, you know, if you're going to give it on those dynamics and you can't move the scale, okay? Don't move the goalpost because he's – now, it has happened when Embiid got it. He wasn't on the best team.
Right.
But his numbers spoke. Westbrook, you know, with the triple-doubles.
Yep.
But what Shea has been able to accomplish with that team, that youth, and be able to win those games through the course of the year and still just be on top, of course. I mean, I put him at the top of my list, most definitely.
Not battle-tested, though, obviously. Yeah. This group's never been to a playoff, never experienced any of those pressures over a seven-game series. So, and then they're on down. Is Dallas, can they really put it together? They've been hot lately.
You hate to see them in the first round.
You do not want to
see them. You do not want to see Dallas. You do not want to see them in the first round.
They got a guy who can score 70.
And another guy
and
right
another
there.
Another guy who could score 50 if he wanted.
And hit big-time shots when it counts.
Yep.
I thought of his whole career. When he's out there.
That's right. But I think Kyrie's in a better place mentally, right? Because you haven't heard anything from Kyrie in regards to off the court stuff.
Yeah,
and not to say to me that's bad in a lot of instances.
There was a lot of noise last year.
But it was a lot of noise around him the last few years.
Yeah.
And you don't have that in Dallas. Hence, they're on the right track of playing a lot better because of that.
True that.
No.
I just, you know, the Clipper fan comes out, and I'm so hesitant to say this. I got to knock wood. They're healthy for the first time in a long time. I'm knocking on the wood.
Clippers?
Yeah, because now you don't have Kawhi, you know, with a blown out knee and Paul. Like, it's just, I'm eager to see if this team stays healthy, what it can do, because you've got a guy in Kawhi who's a proven super duper star, right? Who's led different teams to championships. You've got a James Harden, right? Who doesn't have to be number one on the call sheet, as I like to say.
Right.
James is three on the call sheet. So you don't need James to carry you every game. He just has to facilitate. And then every now and then you're going to get that 20, 30 point James Harden game.
You want to play New Orleans?
Very interesting.
Hey, but see, here's the thing. New Orleans, and they're going back and forth with the Clips.
Zion looks amazing right now.
Yeah. But then at the top, just some teams that they've kind of struggled against.
Sure.
They've lost the season battles to New Orleans, OKC, to Minnesota. So unless they win the Pacific, then they won't have a full home court advantage. Yeah. They play some of those teams in that first round.
Phoenix, Booker had 35 in the first half last night, still got KD.
I question, though, with Phoenix, though, down in the tough game, point guard. Then we go back to making decisions.
Right.
You're not the core, but they're thin because they had to give a lot away for Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Really have a decision maker at the point. Not that Booker can't run it or KD can't bring it up. It's the difference between bringing the ball up and knowing how to navigate and negotiate the last 4 minutes of a game
from
a point guard perspective. So a lot of and I'm going to Phoenix. I'm going to check out the game tomorrow night just to watch him up close and personal again.
I mean,
too.
Just look at the play-in teams of the West. Is Phoenix, yeah. Sacramento, LA, and Golden State.
At the beginning of the year, if you'd have said you'd have said what? Those four teams, especially Sacramento too.
Are in. You'd be like, they're in. They're not. They're top six.
Yeah.
Play-in teams right now. It's going to be awesome.
We got a break?
Let's go to break.
All right. We got some. TJ got some good stuff coming back.
We got stories.
You like the tease right there, T.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there is the sneak a peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. A lot of you folks who've been listening to this show know about our relationship with Game Time, which is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase because you could see views from your seat. And before you buy your tickets, before you hit that purchase button, you get all in pricing so you know everything that's into the cost of your seat and there's no surprises at all. Now here's something you may not know about Game Time. It's the authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch. Killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seats, and the lowest price guarantee, with Game Time taking the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. So download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account. Redeem the code EISEN. You get $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. I don't know if you're aware, but you going to Yale was brought up on game two of the NBA Finals.
No way.
Yes, because...
Was it the part where the Cavs were really losing at the end?
No, it's not that. No. It's that Jeff Van Gundy, who was on the broadcast, said he went to school with you.
No way.
In a class. Do you...
Sorry, Jeff. Don't remember you. You weren't that memorable.
Oops. You don't remember Jeff Van Gundy
in class? I'm afraid I don't.
Because the reverse is true.
No. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Your phone wasn't lighting up from friends saying,
no,
hey.
I wish I'd seen him. I would have been able to see his face and maybe, you know. But
well,
I
think we could. Can we bring up a picture of Jeff Van Gundy? I don't know. So just stroll down memory lane here. The one in the middle is Jeff Van Gundy. Does that ring a bell
that
to you?
That rings no bell whatsoever. I'm so sorry, Jeff.
No class reunions at all with Dean Jody Foster and Jeff Van Gundy. Okay.
We noticed you mentioned on the air that you were classmates with Jody Foster at Yale.
Yeah, and then you cheap shot at me afterwards.
No, I don't know. I don't
like,
know about cheap.
You brought her on and just feigned total indifference to my existence in the world. It was a setup. I mean, our freshman year, there was 12 guys on the floor. We all threw in $100 and said, hey, the first guy that gets a date with Jody Foster, you win the money. I'm coming back from the gym in the early fall, and there's a candy shop right outside the big quad for freshmen. The popcorn is popping. It smells great. And from behind me, someone goes, man, that popcorn smells good. And I turn around, and it's her. And I totally choke, and I say, yeah, yeah, and I run to my dorm. Right? I was scared. I was intimidated by her.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. This segment is all dedicated to TJ because we've been waiting the whole afternoon. You know, and, you know, it's funny.
All afternoon, Jim. This was brought up last week.
Yeah. So
last week he started on this.
So when we get into it, this is one thing that always happened. When I went to another team, which was a bunch of them, people would wait. Guys would wait until they get to know me. Then they would come in with the same thing. Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you. It wasn't right away. It was, you know, a fill-out period. So the stage is yours.
Well, that's the truth, because I met you in 2018, yeah. And it's now 2024. I'm just now getting around to it. Look, here's the deal. And if you remember back in those days in the early 90s, for people who may or may not remember, you played for the Dallas Mavericks.
True.
You were teammates with Jason Kidd, Jamal Mashburn, Triple J's. And it
true.
Looked like you guys were building something.
Nice team.
Nice team is going to take over the NBA. But much like a lot of things that happen in life, sometimes a divide, something comes in and drives a wedge between young men that kind of... makes empires fall. Okay, let's just say that.
Wow.
Makes empires fall.
That's a lot of pressure, man.
This is quite the setup.
And burn. And you got to ask yourself, how many ways can this happen? You know, do you hit the freeway? And the point being is this. There was a rumor, and this is pre-internet, pre-social media,
right,
that a very, very huge, gorgeous female pop star had come in between a few members of this team and kind of messed up the chemistry. Like, I'm hearing that the only thing that was pH balanced in that locker room was the shampoo after this was all said and done.
Wow.
So what I'm asking you now, Jimmy, is maybe just put the story to bed. Maybe that's the wrong way to say it. But can you maybe just tell us what really happened? How did the Triple J Ranch burn to the ground?
Well, it wasn't that simple, because put it to bed is one thing, because I've told and talked about this since then. Mm-hmm. It's never changed. The story was never changed. Okay, let's put it on the table. What they said was that Tony Braxton broke up the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Wow. And a limo pulled up. Oh. I came downstairs and got in. She was looking for Jason, but she left with me, which was totally false. That's what they said. I said, how could that be the case? Because when we were in Atlanta, a good friend of mine was running an evening event at this place called Catfish Station.
Okay.
Jason was with me, and we went that night together to that place. So that nullifies and cancels everything that was said right there. You see what I'm saying in regards to that? So.
Well, now that brings up other questions.
Okay. It brings up other. How does it happen? Well, my understanding is we're in New York. And now keep in mind, I never met Tony Braxton. Briefly at a TLC album release party New York.
Okay. Woo.
Okay, I'm dropping names. You know, I was important. VIP section.
He was trying to spin a T-Boss. Yeah, just,
no, you know. Hey. Des Moines, Iowa. Shout out to T-Boss. Des Moines, Iowa. That's where she's from. But I met Tony briefly. Like, hey, how you doing? That's it. Never met her. Never interacted. Never anything.
But you knew her, obviously.
No.
Oh, you didn't?
Okay. Never. No. No relationship, nothing.
You knew who she was, I guess.
Of course.
Yeah, she was.
The haircut. Come on, man. Everybody wanted, the women wanted the Tony Braxton haircut.
That was the move.
But here's the thing. So we're in New York, and now we've had some. Now, it's a lot of. This is really deep. You got to understand the dynamics of the Mavericks, and I'm going to wrap it up at the end and tell you.
Now, Jim, this was 93, 94?
This was 95.
95, okay.
Okay, so this is a year after I came off of my injury. So we already had some tension on the team, whether, you know, my coming back was hurting the team more than helping. Because at that time, I had a third-degree sprain, and they said it had been better if you had just broke your ankle. Wow. So 51 to the games of the season, my third year, tear it up. I come back, I'm not the same, because it's my left foot. I got knee issues, all kind of stuff. And we're kind of struggling to win games. So it's a lot of moving parts here. Jay Kidd and I were like best friends, but then that tension started to happen as the team pulled away of who should be in the lineup, who should not be in the lineup. All of this stuff was going on. So we're in New York, and I had a publicist at the time, Patty Webster, rest in peace. She said, do you want to go to the studio to see Tony Braxton? I said, okay. She said, you can bring some teammates. I said, okay. I'll call some of the guys and see if it goes on. Now, mind you, we still got a little tension going on. Get to the hotel. And at that time, it's before you really had cell phones, so I'm calling people in the room. Like, if y'all want to go, just hit me up. We'll leave here at 8:30, whatever it is. I don't get a call. Nobody calls me back. Wow. Everybody else has something else to do. Now, mind you, I blew off a corporate sponsored dinner with Coca-Cola and maybe AT&T. But since nobody called me back, I said, well, I ain't going. And I ended up going to dinner with Scott Brooks. Mm. Okay, Scotty Brooks, old OKC coach in D.C. Yep. So we end up going to dinner, having a great time. Next day in practice, shoot around. And as we move forward, I started to hear the stuff about Tony Braxton on the squad. But nobody ever approached me and asked me about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on, but it's little joke stuff. Then all of a sudden, this stuff comes out about that this happened. And I'm like, how could this? And now, Tony Braxton didn't help it, because she had an album called Secrets at the time. So she came out and said, which is great PR for her, a good girl doesn't kiss and tell. Ingenious. 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 I mean, the timing was perfect.
Right.
An album called Secrets, and, you know, we're, you know, the three young up-and-coming. Now, Jamal had nothing to do with this. Jamal gets dragged into this for no reason whatsoever. He had nothing to do with it. But long story short, nothing happened. At the end of the year, Jim Clemens comes in as the coach. We have a blowout meeting, and I get to finally understand and hear what happened. What I heard was, and they told me, well, you left us and went to the studio, and that's what happened. I said, are you telling me all this time this going on that you thought I left you guys and went to the studio? I said, Scotty Brooks, tell them what happened that night. And Scotty told them they were all looking around. So the room, when it comes, this is the funny part. When it comes up all the time, they talk about the breakups mm-hmm. in the NBA. Ours always comes
always.
Up.
Always.
So I got people who think they know, even reporters who thought they knew, and don't have a clue. That's why I said you got to be careful perpetuating a rumor when you don't know what's going on. So all these people, young people, I'm like, man, you weren't even born back then. And you talking about if it wasn't for Tony Braxton, the three, stop it. You weren't even born. Okay, now let me put the bigger picture on you. Mm-hmm. The reason why to me it didn't work with the Mavericks wasn't that. I was there 5 years. I had three owners, Donald Carter, David McDavid, and then Ross Perot Jr. Okay? Four coaches. Two coaches were first time, Quinn Buckner, Jim Clemens. Yep. So we had no stability. You're changing management, coaching, ownership every other year. You're trying to draft and build around young people. They traded Derek Harper, saying that when Quinn was there that Derek wasn't a point guard. Stu Inman said, no, he's a two guard. So they started Fat Lever, and that's when they traded Derek Harper to the Knicks. Mm-hmm. So this is – people don't understand what the dynamics around the team is why it didn't work. Because we didn't have stability in the front office, which then led to instability on the court. So Jason, Jamal, and I never played 82 games together. People don't realize that. Mm-hmm. I was there first. Jamal came my second year. We played 82 games together. Jay Kidd came the following year. I got hurt 51 games in the season. The next year, Jamal got hurt in the season with his knee. That fifth year, we all get traded. So we've never played a full 82 games together as a trio. So all of this stuff gets lost in the dynamics because the Tony Braxton part is the sexy part. That's the part that everybody grabs on.
That's urban legend.
I tell you, you know, your stock price go up when you say you mess with Tony Braxton. You know what I'm saying? It's like your stock price a little bit higher. You know what I mean? Go around and people say, hey, you know.
Tony Braxton?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, because like I said, everyone back then, you don't know. There's no internet. So you just hear.
But you don't know. But you don't know today.
One of you and the other one, like, kind of made a move and slid in there. And that's what blew up. And that for years, that's what everyone always
still. Still, to this day, when I see stuff and stuff pops up, I just laugh at it.
Yeah.
And especially when people think they know what they're talking. And I talked to some reporters who were around the time, and they reported. I'm like, bro, how could you report it? And when Nelly came in our fifth year and blew everything up, John Nelson. Under the auspice, he was coming in as general manager and didn't want to coach, but he ended up coaching the team. But the thing that really upset me about Nelly was this. As a general manager, you can do what you want. You can trade who you want, whatever. Mm-hmm. But understand the baseline on what has happened. Have a conversation with the participants or the party involved so you can understand what's going on. He never had a conversation with me. So he kind of went out there and said, well, this group, he tainted, especially me, without having a conversation, understanding my point of view and where I'm coming from and stuff I had to deal with and what was going on. He took a paintbrush, broadly painted it, and put everybody in that category. And from a coach like Nelly, who's a Hall of Famer, what he says, people listen to.
For sure.
So then I got caught up into that part of it by what he said was, you know, we got a lot of insurrection in the house. We got this. We got guys doing. I said, Nelly, you never even sat down and just chopped it up with me. Now, you can make your decision after that if you still choose to trade and do whatever. Right. But at least get my point of view so you can understand why we got to this point. Never happened. So all those – that's why I said you got to – you know, the James Harden situation with Daryl Morey.
Yeah, yeah.
All these people talking about James Harden and what was promised. I said, you have to be extremely careful of thinking you know what's going on outside when you don't. Because it was intimate conversations that James and Daryl Morey had that nobody's privy to. And there's a reason why James is reacting the way he was, right or wrong, based on a lot of those intimate conversations. And a lot of times we look at it at a surface, so we're going to make a decision based on this. I said, bro, you got to be careful. Everybody wants to be first to the punch. But there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that you have no idea about. Thanks. And that's why people make decisions. So there you go. So it's, you look disappointed.
Well, I was hoping for, you know.
You was hoping for what? Some meat, right?
I'm glad we now know. Like I said, it was just something that, you know, back in those days, the story ran, and that was the reason, and that's why this team broke up, and blah, 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 and woo, woo. You know, we were thinking he wasn't man enough for her, you know, there were 7 whole days where things went down, but now you can breathe again and letting this off your chest.
You unbroke TJ's heart.
No, I came back and unbroke your heart, brother. That's just what I did right there.
And I think people forget, too, you were balling that third year. You had a 50-point game. You had 44 two games before you got injured.
Yeah.
You know, that was really your coming out party in the NBA, and then in freak injury, and then it kind of
you know what's interesting?
For 10 teams after
You know what's interesting is that we have superstitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Jay Kidd, we played Washington that game. I had 44, and we ended up. Now keep in mind on that team it was Rasheed Wallace, Chris Webber, Juwan Howard was on that team.
Yeah, they all.
Tim Legler, okay. So I think Ross Stritland was on the team too at the time. I'm not for sure. But Jay Kidd hurt his ankle in the first half. So ended up 44. So we go to Jersey to play. Jason Williams, Zach Crew. I'm superstitious. Never changed my – I wore the same shoe, these Nike shoes. Nike came to me and said, will you wear these Hirachis? Mm-hmm. Remember the Michigan wore back in the day? And I'm like,
Not ankle support in those.
Because they had like a hole in them.
Wait, and is that the shoe you hurt your ankle in was the Hirachi?
'94.
Oh, wow.
So here we go. I didn't tape at the time.
Oh.
I never taped. Okay? So I put the shoes on. I'm like, man, these things feel so soft. They're not giving. So I go out and I warm up. I said, you know what? At halftime, I'm changing, going back to my shoes.
Oh, man.
7.5 minutes into the game is when I tore my ankle.
Oh.
So not only that, they took me to the hospital. And I think they might have got dislocated. And I remember being drugged. I mean, my ankle was like a grapefruit.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay? So it caused tendonitis. And I'm a left foot jumper.
Mm-hmm.
So all the explosion off of my left foot basically went away. Totally changed how I played. Luckily, I could, you know, kind of dive into being an all-around player and kind of making it work, but I was never the same because I couldn't explode like I wanted to. It got to a point, guys, where during that next year, I didn't really talk about it. I went up and got some treatments up in Canada on it, but if I was running straight line and wanted to catch a pass and go up, I couldn't explode off my left foot because the pain would shoot up my knee. So subconsciously, I wouldn't run as hard. I slowed down. I would go off 2 feet. And you're like, well, why is he doing that? Well, it's because I couldn't explode without having pain in my knee, but I didn't want to use it as an excuse to why I wasn't playing. Well, it just is what it is. I just had to deal with it. But it was a lot of stuff that came from that injury. If it had happened in today's world with technology.
Different story, right?
Different story. Different story. But at that time, we didn't have – you know, the medical.
Yeah, an ACL tear or something like that.
Oh, yeah, back then, ACL,
you're done.
Achilles, gone.
Achilles, done.
You know, but now you can turn that thing around real quick. But I tell you this, though. Being on 12 teams taught me a lot. Taught me a lot about me. Taught me a lot about adversity. Taught me a lot about adapting to your environment. Going into a situation. Because I'd never had a problem playing basketball. Never had an issue playing. I was always really good. Then you go to a point where you got to start to question, okay, am I really that good anymore? Can I do what I used to? Or if I can't, how can I still be effective with my limited position? Or ego going to different teams, okay, how do I fit in, you know, with a new group? But what it taught me, too, was I had some outstanding teammates, man, lived in some great cities, met some people I never would have met in my life, opened up doors that have helped me to this day, probably why I'm in the seat right now, by adjusting and living in different cities. So I had to flip my mindset about it.
That's what's up. And now we know.
Now you know.
The rest of the story.
That's it.
See? TJ disappointed.
TJ's like, love it. All right, let's hit a break. Finish it up.
Got
let's
it.
This.
Roll out.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
What's great, man, are these, you know, we do a lot of NFL, NBA shows on Family Feud for celebrity.
Right.
It's great, man, when regular people discover that celebrities don't know nothing. They don't. You think because a person is famous, they know more. They actually know less.
Yeah.
They know less than anybody else because they're exposed to less. Rich people don't know how much milk costs. You get out of touch, man. And when they come on Celebrity Family Feud, you find out how out of touch they are. They don't know anything, man. Like, one of the questions for the NFL team was, and we were asking a guy running back for the Packers, can't think of his name, but the question was, complete the sentence, strip, and you spoke, you know, like strip mall,
strip
poker,
strip sack. This could be
strip sack. Yeah. I said, name, complete the word strip. He said, purr. Strip purr. I went, hold on, man. I quit breathing. How is that your point of reference to complete the word strip? Purr. P-E-R. And that was it. I was done. That was one of my great moments.
And again, you just walk away and you realize it in the moment, like, okay, this is it, and I'm gonna let this thing go.
Hey, after the show, he asked me, he said, Steve, is there any way we could edit that out? I said, sir, we're not editing that out. Matter of fact, we're gonna embellish it. You're gonna say purr so loud. Purr.
Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. Game Time is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. Find last-minute seats, exclusive flash and sponsored deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. And Game Time provides the all-in pricing feature that shows the total upfront with no surprise fees to check out. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Game Time. Download the Game Time app.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom. All right, what other stories you got there, Jim? Yeah,
how much time do we have?
About 6 minutes.
What was your favorite city to, to play?
Great. You
so
know what?
So you played for 12 teams.
12 teams.
12 teams.
What was your... Chris, not to interrupt. Can you name the 12 real quick?
Stop it.
I mean, come on.
Come on, man. Yeah, can you want me to name them?
I mean, I got them in front of me right here.
Well, I mean, it's, that's easy. Dallas. You want to go in sequential order?
Oh, that's your order. We want order.
Dallas, New Jersey, Philly, Golden State, Portland. Then I went to Atlanta. Then I went to Cleveland, Sacramento. Then it was Houston. Then it was Phoenix. Then it was the Lakers.
You skipped Miami. Yeah.
In Miami. Miami 202.
Yeah.
Cleveland, but that Miami. I got a great story.
Oh, let's go.
Oh. Let's go.
Pat Riley in Miami.
Pat Riley.
Yeah. You played for some legendary coaches.
Legendary coaches. So we're playing the Old Summit against the Rockets. Okay. And Stan is the assistant coach. And Pat was... At that time, Pat was the man, right? So we're getting just hammered in the first half. So we go in the locker room at halftime, and it's a whiteboard, and Pat is upset. He has this beautiful 18-karat gold watch on. He takes it off and just slams it against the whiteboard. Oh. I mean, that's just Pat. You got money, you can do that, right? Forget it. So we go out in the second half. We come back. We, you know, game tied up or whatever it is. And at the end of the game, I hit the game-winning shot.
Boom.
Run off the court. Come back in the locker room. Pat is congratulating and doing everything. And Pat looks around and says, Jimmy, here, take this. He gave me the watch.
Oh. That he smashed?
That he smashed. And I'm trying to fix the watch. I took it to some of the best jewelers. They was like, it ain't going to happen. And to this day, Pat Roddy said, Jimmy, you still got that watch? I said, go. I tried to get it fixed. I tried to melt it down. I tried to get everything I could out of that watch, but it didn't work.
What, you remember what kind it was?
I think it was a B-Blow, something like that.
Oh, wow.
But it was 18. I know it was 18 karat gold. But that was Pat Riley in the essence. He was such a competitor. He wanted us to reach that level. And he was just like, when he did that. But that I had an opportunity to, I wish young guys could learn that basic fundamentals of how to be a pro in that organization, then that'll stay with you the rest of your career.
Right.
Because it lays the foundation on what you need to do.
So you buy into the Heat culture. You think that's a real thing?
Oh, definitely. Now, it's changed a little bit in today's world because you can't approach players the same way. Spoelstra has to coach a little bit different, not like Pat. You can't practice as hard and long. But culturally, what they do in the front office, and they take care of you, holidays, birthdays, so you can just go do your job. So it's a model franchise, not just on the court, but off the court. And a lot of that has to do with the owner, Mickey Erickson, on how he allows everyone that he has hired to be at the best of their position, and he takes that and allows them to do it.
Great. Great stuff today. Jim's back tomorrow. We're going to do this all again.
Be back tomorrow, so make sure you join us. TJ has some more questions, of course, that we're going to address.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.